I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance, or don't understand the differences between insurance plans, or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're going to do it together. Let's get unspun. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Unspun. It's time for another mini-episode on how something in journalism works. And by the time you finish this episode, you'll have some ideas about why journalists do interviews, what the sources are, and what they ask them. And most importantly, how a journalist might deal with a source who's trying really, really hard not to answer their questions. Sound good? Let's get unspun. I talked a couple weeks ago about press conferences and about how those work. And those are one of the ways that journalists will get information from live sources. This week, though, I'd like to talk to you about the other way that journalists get information from live sources, which is the interview. You'll see interviews in everything from basic local newspaper kind of stories to those Sunday morning interview shows like Meet the Press that maybe don't have so many viewers on Sunday morning, but they get viewed a lot in clip form afterward on social media. Why do journalists do interviews anyway? I'd say there's five basic things reporters are looking for when they do an interview. The thing you'd think of first, I imagine, is information. You can think about information as coming in a couple of different ways. We have information you can read about, right? We have information that comes in the form of data. But information is also a reason that you might do interviews. For example, what does it mean when you get so hot that you actually stop sweating? You might get that information from a doctor. What's likely to happen in an upcoming vote in the legislature? You might get that information from a lawmaker. A second thing from an interview is an anecdote. And anecdotes are those little stories that help to act as illustrations, and they help to make information relatable for people. I don't want to just say that something was decided, but maybe I want to tell you the story of how that decision came about. When you're trying to interest someone in something that you're writing, you need to tell a story. For example, you might read in a magazine about how to make your food safe, and that article might have a story in it from someone who made their whole family sick with a holiday dinner or something like that. When you're reading that story, it's secondhand information. It's being told to you by someone who talked to the person who experienced it. The reporter talked to the person, and you're reading it. The magazine writer might have actually found it in another written source, and that would make it third-hand information. And, you know, generally speaking, reporters look for first-hand information whenever they can get it. Anecdotes are a good way to do that, and they're a lot easier to deal with than trying to build a story out of a dry set of facts. A third thing you get out of interviews is a description. So here's an example. Way back in the day, when I was but a baby reporting intern, I got my chance at my internship to interview the guest of a local symphony. He was an actor named David Ogden Steers, and he was best known at the time for playing the character of Charles Emerson Winchester III, an extremely pompous doctor who was part of the medical crew in a comedy show called MASH about the Korean War. He was coming to town as actually the guest conductor of the symphony. So you have an actor who played a pompous character. He's in town for what some might consider a pompous activity, right? Conducting classical music with the symphony. And so I went to interview him at the apart hotel that the symphony had arranged for him. And one of the first things that I noticed was that he had on bright purple socks. Bright purple socks are not pompous. Do know this was a while ago, before bright socks in menswear were as acceptable as they are now. But even when I was talking to him in his relatively casual hotel room interview, he still had on a sport coat and a tie. But he had those bright purple socks. And then, while I was talking to him, the maid came in. And she was cleaning up and she started loading some dishes he had used into his dishwasher. And he turned around and called back over his shoulder and said, "Oh, that's fine, I'll take care of that. Don't you worry about it." And I wrote that down too. Those little bits of description were something that I could weave into my story. Much as I might have expected going into the interview a very pompous person, I expected my readers would as well. So having those little bits of detail that showed he was actually relatable was a nice thing that could have only come if I had gone and interviewed him. The fourth thing is pretty simple. It's getting leads to other people that you can talk to. And this is a question that a good journalist will always ask. Who else knows about this? Who else should I talk to? Those kind of things. And finally, something my students worry about a lot, which is quotations. I think quotations are one of the things people most expect from an interview. In a video interview, it's those little sound bites that you might clip out and share elsewhere. In text, it might be things that you're pulling out and putting in big type as a pull quote. I have to remind my students, though, that quotations in themselves are not always that important. Sometimes people will just say things in a way that it's really difficult for people to understand. You know, so someone who works in a school district may not call something a test, they may call it an evaluation instrument. Or a police officer may not call someone a robber or a killer, they might call them a perpetrator. You know, those kind of things. Those are words that you really don't always want to use in quotes. But sometimes they're important. It depends on the context. First of all, when the subject's exact words are particularly picturesque, you know, they really kind of capture the mood of the story, then it might be good to use a quote. Here's an example. At a previous university I worked at, I had a student who was known for being really good at interviewing. The university was trying to build up its athletics program, but the football team was having a just horrendous season. My student was really good at interviewing, and the football coach said to him in an interview, quote, "Well, I guess we're the worst team in America right now." That is an amazing quotation, right? When your own coach says that about you. And I think it has a lot to say about his internal state of mind. So when those exact words matter a lot, then quotations from an interview matter a lot. Sometimes you need the information to come from an authoritative source, so you might quote it. So for example, you might quote an attorney to interpret something legal or a scientist to interpret something scientific. And finally, if you're sharing what somebody else thinks, right, like what their opinion is, it's always better to do that in a direct quotation so it doesn't sound like you're kind of putting words in their mouths. All right, how do journalists decide who to interview? Well, journalists themselves will cultivate multiple kinds of sources. First of all, a journalist will usually have a coverage area and they will get to know the people in that coverage area. So for example, if you cover city government, you probably know well the mayor, the city manager, everyone on the city council, all the department heads, those kind of things. And those would be what you'd call an ongoing source. When something comes up that you don't cover very often, you may be looking for a one-time source. You know, so imagine something tragic happens in a neighborhood, like there's a shooting or a house burns down, and you might interview some of the neighbors. You're not going to be going back to those people probably, so that's a one-time source. And then sometimes journalists will do what I call like off-the-street interviews. Personally, I'm not a big fan of those. Generally, what you're doing is you're asking the most convenient person to give the mood of perhaps hundreds of thousands of people in the place where they happen to be. But they do happen. We went downtown and we asked people for their opinion on this issue kind of thing. We saw a lot of this in 2016 after the election, with reporters from big coastal news outlets going and sitting in diners in small Midwestern towns to try to get people to explain why they voted the way they did. I need to take a quick break. I'll be right back. Welcome back. When it actually comes to finding people to interview, that happens in a couple of different ways. For those ongoing sources, of course, the journalist will know how to contact them. And for those other interviews, it depends on the kind of outlet that you work for. If you work in a print outlet, like a magazine or a website, you're usually going to reach out yourself. You may hear about people from other contacts you have. You may get names from written sources if it's a story about a company, the company directory, or something like that. Now, if you're working in broadcasting, sometimes you'll have someone called a producer who will actually go and set up interviews with sources for you. In fact, when you have people who are tapped for one-time stories for broadcasting, often the producer will call or do a Zoom or something and pre-interview the person. They do this because, especially in a live context, you don't want the person you're interviewing to be falling all over their words. So if they've had a chance to practice answering the questions, it can be really helpful in making them sound like they know what they're talking about. One thing you'll see sometimes is that prominent sources, like important politicians or celebrities, they will try to set restrictions on what they will and will not talk about in an interview. And sometimes the journalists who are interviewing them, particularly on your commentary or opinion shows like you might see on a Sunday morning or on a Fox News or an MSNBC, they won't actually honor those stipulations. And sometimes you will see sources get kind of angry about that. One of the most important things you have to do for those one-time sources is to ensure that they actually have something to say. For a print reporter, this can be a little bit easier because they don't usually have that time pressure. But for a broadcast reporter, it can be highly embarrassing, especially if they're live, to be interviewing somebody who is either ignorant or lying, and that's kind of clear to the audience. How do you know that someone has access to the information they're sharing with you? You can do things like look at their former positions, right? Did they ever have a chance to acquire a particular piece of knowledge? For one-time sources, you can ask them specific questions about where they get information. And sometimes this will be something the producer will do before they actually put someone live on the air. You know, they might ask questions like, where were you standing when you saw this event that you want to talk to us about? What was the weather like that day? What did you see across the street? These are all things that you can verify, and they can act for a check for the fact that someone's telling you the truth. What can be a little harder is knowing that someone's coming at you with an agenda. And if they do that, it's tough to untangle whether the information they're giving you is actually important or if it's just a talking point. So here's an example. Back at the time that I was that baby intern, we got a call at the weekly newspaper I was working at that a U.S. senator for the state we were in was involved in a kind of a shady land deal. Essentially, he had made an arrangement to buy a plot of land from the state utility company. And that plot of land, it turned out, was a place where a major highway might be located. And the senator was on the transportation committee, so he had a lot of sway on whether that highway was going to go there or not. Now, when you have a major highway going past your plot of land, you could definitely stand to benefit financially. Once there's the highway, then you can have a McDonald's or a gas station or whatever. So the thing that was interesting was the person who called, because he represented a group of real estate developers. And so as a reporter, you have to think, why would they be calling me to complain about this senator and this land deal? Probably because they wanted to buy the land and to develop it themselves, right? Whoever was able to develop that land stood to make a lot of money in the future, because the land wasn't worth very much the way it was, but would be worth a lot once the highway got put there. Because of the agenda of the people who called, we had to do a lot of extra checking on that story, and we ended up not using the people from that real estate developer group as a source at all. Okay, so you've got your person to interview. Now, how are you going to do it? There's a couple of things that you will need to do. First of all, a journalist would not go into an interview without some idea of what it is they want to find out. In a true emergency situation like a natural disaster, this may just be very quickly jotting a few questions into a notes app on a phone or something like that. But in any kind of prepared interview, like those Sunday morning news shows, you usually are going to have all your questions planned out in advance. To ask good questions, you need to already have some information. Remember that an interview is often a chance to confirm information or get perspective or an official voice on something. An interview should not be you getting all of the information for the first time. And in fact, busy newsmakers will stop talking to you if you're asking them obvious, easily verifiable things. So first things first, you got to do your homework. You're going to have the things that you want to know, but you also have to think kind of carefully about the order in which you're going to ask the questions. This really matters. It especially matters when you're dealing with someone who is not excited to talk to you. So it might be somebody who's been accused of doing something wrong and they're giving their side of the story, or maybe they're speaking for someone in their family who's been accused of doing something wrong. Generally, you're going to want to organize your questions from the easiest to the most difficult. Easiest are things that people would want to tell you and that they can easily know and remember. Things like, what do you do at your job? What do you like about this person? You know, those kind of things. More difficult things might be the things that they don't want to tell you, or they might just be things that are a little harder for them to remember or to put together. You put the questions in this order because you want to get as much information as you can from the person. And in order to do that, you're going to have to establish what journalists call rapport. This means making them feel like you're listening carefully to them, that you're doing a good job, you're taking notes, you're going to legitimately try to get their side of the story and not just try to do a gotcha. Ethically, that is, in fact, what you are trying to do. You're trying to get their side of the story. So you ask the questions in that order. The way you take notes also matters. In broadcasting, obviously, you're going to have a camera and a microphone that's going to be recording everything. Most print reporters take notes electronically in some way as well, usually with some kind of notes app on a phone or a recorder on a phone, sometimes a big tape recorder. But you should be aware that for some people, the presence of a camera or an electronic recorder is just something that makes them very nervous. This is because it shows them that anything they say is going to be exactly known and can be exactly reported, and it's especially an issue for people who don't often talk to the media. For them, it's a good idea to let the person get comfortable in talking with you with the technology there before you start asking them the questions that you're actually going to use. So sometimes you have some kind of dummy questions that you can throw in. As the interviewer, you have to always be listening to the answers that people give. And this is where you get into dealing with those really difficult sources. Prominent newspapers will come into something like a Sunday morning show with a set of things they want to say. And in fact, every once in a while, you'll see on social media that a list of those talking points will go around to everyone who's a member of a particular political group or something like that. But they come in with the points they want to make. And often, these points are not the answers to your questions. I think you've all seen some examples of people being interviewed who are trying very hard not to answer the questions that they are asked. And as a reporter, this can be tricky. You have to listen carefully for the fact that they did not answer your question. And you have to then re-ask it. You may re-ask it 5, 6, 7 times. Maybe you change up the wording, but it's still the same question. And they may come back at you with a talking point. A reporter will sometimes just acknowledge the talking point. You know, I hear you saying this thing, but I still want to know this other thing. What do you think about that thing? What are you going to do if this thing happens? This is a best practice in reporting, but all too often, reporters let sources get away with controlling the interview by only answering questions the way they want. And this is something that you can watch for. I'll actually put in the show notes links to a couple of interviews where the source was very, very evasive. And you can see what the journalist does to try to get them back on point. The last thing I want to talk about is editing the results of interviews. There was an interview that was done with Fox News last week with former President Trump asking questions about his recent conviction for felonies in New York. And something that a lot of people noticed when they watched that interview was the fact that there were a lot of very obvious cuts. A cut in the video, you could tell because the person just kind of jumps from place to place or something like that. And this is a sign that something has been edited out. If someone is obviously misspeaking and goes back and corrects himself or something like that, sometimes you can go in and make those kind of changes. I did that in this podcast episode that you're listening to right now. I've actually gone back in a few places where I made mistakes in speaking and I have changed those. And I do that to make it a more pleasant experience for you as the listener. Do notice that this is an audio medium. You're only listening, which means that you do not have the opportunity to see in the visuals where those changes might be. So what does that tell you? It tells you that you can maybe be a little bit more discerning when you're listening to audio, only things like podcasts, radio stories, those kind of things. It's a lot harder for an average listener only to tell when those kind of changes have been made. In video, it's easier. There's a question of if you go in and you make those changes if it is something like news, and the ethics of that can be complicated. The news organization doesn't want to make a source look stupid, but they also don't want to have a terrible viewing experience for the audience. And so when you have someone like former President Trump, who tends to have these very long, winding paths of thoughts that sometimes don't get completed, news organizations did, for a few years, go in and edit him and make his speech sound smoother and more consistent. And they were criticized for this later, because it seemed like maybe they were covering up for things that represented lack of clarity in thinking and not just in speaking. Okay, so that is just a few thoughts on interviewing for this week's mini episode. We've talked about how to find people to interview, how to judge if they're good people to interview, some things to do with the interview itself, and how well they get presented. So as you are watching newsmakers giving information to you through media interviews this week, you can look for things like the order in which the journalist asks questions, if the final result has cuts in it, and more. And one more thing before I let you go. I appreciate so much you listening to Unspun this week. There are more than 1,000 of you listening all over the globe, and it is always so helpful for me to get some feedback about how the episodes are landing. Do you like these short episodes where it's just me? Are there particular topics you're wondering about and you'd like to hear about? I'd love an email at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. That's theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can write in the comments in the review section of the platform that you're listening to this podcast on right now. In any case, I'm so grateful for you and the chance that we've had to get Unspun together. See you next week. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.
Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages, and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange, president, and has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun, I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool and let's kick it.